On Debt, Sex, and Money, we feature interviews with you, our community of listeners, getting honest about uncomfortable things.
I developed an illness where it isn't safe for me to drive. A friend once said to me, sex is like air. You don't think about it until you're not getting enough. This is a similar sort of thing if you just replace sex with driving.
Listen to Debt, Sex, and Money wherever you get podcasts.
Hello, and welcome to Slate Money Food, a whole mini-season devoted to the economics of food and the food industry and everything associated with food. And boy, do we have the perfect episode to kick off this series. It is Costco, obviously, in the news right now because everyone is storming it to stock up on whatever they need in their home bunkers. There is one man who understands Costco better than anyone else around here. That man is Zach Crockett.
Hey, how you doing, Felix?
Zach, tell me about yourself. Who are you and how did you find out all about Costco?
Yeah, so I'm a reporter at The Hustle, a business and tech newsletter. Costco is just this weird, fascinating place that in many ways breaks all the rules of retail. You can buy a 27-pound bucket of mac and cheese, a casket, a $1.50 hot dog, and a life insurance policy. Items sit in these wooden pallets in these dark, unmarked aisles. The brand selection is super limited, and you pay $60 just to get in the door. So I was just wondering how this all makes sense.
We will find out coming up on Slate Money Food. So, Zach, what proportion of Costco members do you think have been just like rushing to Costco to stock up on everything as they start panicking about coronavirus?
This is something, you know, if you spend a lot of time on Twitter or online, you're going to see people jousting over the toilet paper rolls, the panic buying, the empty shelves, all the pictures. I have to say, though, I think that is a relatively small proportion of the Costco customers at large. Most Costco customers are families who buy these big bulk orders or, you know, just people in the suburbs stocking up on stuff. You see these retail arbitrage guys going in and buying big bulk packages of stuff and reselling it on Amazon for a profit. And you also see, the doomsday community going full scale on their Costco binges lately, buying out the toilet paper aisle and so forth. But I think that's actually just a relatively small portion of what's going on right now.
Because this is one of the things which I find super fascinating about Costco, which you are an expert in and which is one of the most amazing businesses in America, is that people don't actually go there very often, right? The whole business model is basically that you have some monster suburban, you know, SUV tank type vehicle, and you drive it into the parking lot of Costco, and then you go and you do some massive shop and buy pallets full of goods, and then you load them into your SUV or your pickup truck or whatever, and you drive them into your four-car garage, and you just let them sit there, and you can basically live off your garage for the next, 3 months until you have to rinse and repeat. If I got that right, because, I mean, I live in Manhattan. I don't really understand this.
That's pretty much it. I mean, the first thing you have to understand is most of these stores are in suburban areas. The average Costco shopper is pretty well off. Like, we're talking like 100K. So for a discount store, that's pretty high. And, you have to have the space to store this stuff, like you said. But very much by design, the average Costco shopper probably only goes in once a month compared to, you know, the average supermarket shopper goes in once a week. So that is very much by design. That also comes with an economic benefit to Costco. You know, the less a customer has to go shop, that's less resources for the store, less restocking resources, less cashier resources, less people taking up space in the parking lots. It's just a more efficient operation, which is very core to their model.
It is super efficient, right? That in a typical supermarket, they, you know, a pallet of goods will come in and then they'll spend a huge amount of effort unpacking everything and so that everyone can buy these, I don't know, bottles of shampoo individually or something. And then at Costco, people are like, I'll just buy a dozen bottles of shampoo at a time. And then I'm like, well, I don't know who thinks that it makes sense to buy a dozen bottles of shampoo at a time, but people do that, right?
Yeah. I mean, look, like you walk into one of these stores and it's really the anti-store in every way. It's like the ugliest place in the world. It's you have these bare concrete floors. There's no signage. There's these giant pallets. There's forklift operators just zooming by you as you're buying your rotisserie chicken, you know. And actually, shockingly, it's actually expensive for Costco to design their stores that way. It costs about $80 million per store just because they're so large. But all of this minimal operation, it's both by design and it ultimately it streamlines the operations, makes things a little bit cheaper for consumers, but it's also kind of just experiential in this weird way.
But I was wondering about that. Like, how much of that is theater? How much of that is like putting on a show of being cheap as opposed to actually being efficient?
Some of it is absolutely a show. Costco is some weird form of capitalistic theater in some ways. It's Jim Sinegal, the founder and ex-CEO of Costco, who stepped down in 2012, has admitted as much. But to be fair, some of it is practical and operational. I would say actually most of it is. Bringing things in on the pallet by forklift reduces the backlog of stuff they have in storerooms. It reduces touch costs, which essentially there's this idea in retail that any time an employee has to touch a good, it adds to the cost. And Costco has very low touch costs. It's coming straight off the truck and basically going right into the store. There's no fancy displays that you might see in Whole Foods. There's no stocking little cans on shelves. You see what you get.
And they have a bunch of like super high-end steaks and lobsters and $1,000 bottles of wine and that kind of stuff as well, right? They're trying to be all things to all people.
Yeah, I mean, you can walk into a Costco and you can buy an 18-carat white gold diamond necklace for $500,000. You can buy a 72-pound wheel of Parmesan cheese. You can buy...
What? And so, like, for realsy, like, who the hell buys a 72-pound wheel of Parmesan? I mean, is that restaurateurs? Are they shopping at Costco?
You know, it's funny you ask that because the original premise of Costco was supposed to be kind of this B2B model that sold to other restaurateurs and food operators. It, you know, goes all the way back to the 50s with Sol Price, who started this store called FedMart, which eventually became the Price Club. One of his employees was Jim Sinegal. He broke off and started Costco. But over time, they realized this business-to-business model of selling to restaurateurs wasn't working. The business only really worked when they opened it up to individual people who kind of had this sudden novelty of going in and seeing these crates for themselves. It's a great question. Who the hell buys this 72-pound thing of cheese, right? I don't actually know. I've never seen any. I'm a Costco customer myself. I go in there. God knows who buys that, but someone does out there, and they have an incentive to sell anything on their shelf because they're incredibly selective about what they do sell. So
this is a bit like Trader Joe's, right? They have a very low number of SKUs, as it's known, the actual items that they sell.
Yeah, so the average supermarket, you're looking at 40 or 50,000 SKUs. Walmart, you're looking at 100,000. Costco has 3,700 SKUs. They're incredibly selective, very small number of items, relatively. You know, in any given category, you're only going to have one or two selections rather than like 15 or 20. It's very low SKU, very high volume. So, you know, you're not going to buy one jar of tomato sauce. You're going to buy a six pack. You're going to buy a 40 pack of toilet paper. You're going to buy, you know, a 7-pound tub of Nutella. That's the kind of volume we're talking about here.
It does raise the question, though, if they only have 3,500 SKUs and each one is very carefully picked out because, you know, they've managed to negotiate some great deal with the manufacturer and they know that it hits the sweet spot. How on earth do they manage to wind up with a 72-pound wheel of Parmesan? Like, it's like that. Is that really in the top 3,500 things that anyone wants?
That's a great question. I mean, someone out there is buying these 7-pound tub of Nutellas and, you know, a lot of... a lot of big families will stock up. I think one interesting thing you just raised is, you know, right now with coronavirus, all of this panic buying we're seeing, Costco, to some small level, I don't want to say they're contributing to that, but by design, they are a stockpiling store in some small way, right? Like, a family is going to go in there maybe once a month and buy enough rations to last them a month. You know, the prepping community, for instance, loves Costco. Costco once at one time sold a $6,000 doomsday kit that gave you rations that would last you like 4 years, dehydrated meats and such. So if you go on these doomsday communities, like these bunker communities, which are very active right now online, you'll see a lot of discussion about Costco.
Your pet is one of a kind, and so is their journey. While every playful moment is a memory in the making, sometimes cats and dogs are a little too good at getting into trouble. That's why you should check out ASPCA Pet Health Insurance. The ASPCA Pet Health Insurance Program offers customizable accident and illness plans, making it easier for pet parents like you to help your pet get the care they may need. The ASPCA Pet Health Insurance Program has been around for over 18 years, and they've helped more than 600,000 pets during that time. They allow you to customize your plan, helping ensure your pet's plan is as unique as they are. Because vet bills can really add up, especially when you're least expecting it. It's simple. Use their app to submit a claim, and you'll receive reimbursement for eligible vet bills directly into your bank account. To explore coverage, visit aspcapetinsurance.com/slatemoney. That's aspcapetinsurance.com/slatemoney. Again, that's aspcapetinsurance.com/slatemoney. This is a paid advertisement. Insurance is underwritten by either Independence American Insurance Company or United States Fire Insurance Company and produced by PTZ Insurance Agency Limited. The ASPCA is not an insurer and is not engaged in the business of insurance.
This podcast is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you're driving, cooking, or doing laundry, Progressive knows the podcasts you listen to go best when they're bundled with another activity, much like how their Progressive home and auto policies go best when they're bundled. Having these two policies together makes taking care of your insurance easier and could help you save, too. Customers who save by switching their home and car insurance to Progressive save nearly $800 on average. That's a whole lot of savings and protection for your favorite podcast listening activities, like going on a road trip, cooking dinner, and even hitting the gym. Yep, your home and your car are even easier to protect when you bundle your insurance together. Find your perfect combo. Get a home and car insurance quote at progressive.com today. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $793 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2021 and May 2022. Potential savings will vary.
I mean, in terms of this, like, stocking up mindset, it seems to me that this is really, it's not just a prepper and doomsday thing. I mean, although that's happening right now, it's actually deeply embedded in the entire Costco business model. I have this mental model of, you know, we used to live in villages and there would be the fishmonger and the greengrocer and the butcher and the pharmacist and the, you know, all the rest of it. And you would go from one to the next with your shopping bags and you'd like buy from each one and then you do the same thing the next day. And that would be like a daily thing. And you could do it all with like a couple of tote bags over each arm. And then when things became much more suburban, that model changed to exactly what you were talking about, which was the weekly shop at the supermarket. And in order to do a weekly shop at the supermarket, you needed a fridge. Mm-hmm. But you also you needed quite a big fridge to fit a week's worth of food. And then you also needed a bunch of other storage for the non-perishable foods and whatnot. And the service that a bunch of those old village stores were doing was, we will stock all of these things in stock for you. And then when you need them, you can come and buy them. And then with the rise of the supermarket, that balance changed. And it's like, well, we will just sell you a bunch of stuff once a week. And then you will stock it in your own home. And then when you need it, you will go and find it on the third shelf in the garage. Yeah. And then that just got turbocharged by Costco. But the amount of just sheer square footage and freezer space that you need in order to be a Costco member seems to be like a deeply American thing.
this is the ultimate mutation of what you just talked about. It's, I mean, Costco has 114 million square feet of retail space. It's almost unfathomable, but this is almost all the way down. They've taken the model all the way down the chain where they've almost eliminated a part of that supply chain process where they're, you know, they'll even skip this distribution process sometimes and take the crates straight from manufacturers to stores. So it's giving consumers a taste of that back end process of retail. And in the process, it actually does make things a little bit cheaper in some ways.
Yeah. Or I mean, it kind of is somewhere almost back towards like the wholesale end of the chain rather than the retail end of the chain. Mm-hmm. And it's done on this subscription basis, right? You have to buy a membership. And so in a weird way, like what you're doing when you're buying that membership is you're, you know, paying rent on this million square foot warehouse where you can just walk in and buy whatever you need in bulk. I don't know what the best way to think about this membership. Was the membership like a lock-in thing? Whereas once you start paying the membership thing, then you feel like you need to go back.
Yeah, it's a sunk cost fallacy. You know, you pay this upfront cost of $60 just to get access to the store. You're already in the hole before you've even started shopping. So, you know, there's this frantic mindset, like I have to recoup that $60. People often walk into Costco with the idea that they're going to do a $50, $60 shopping trip, and they'll walk out with like $700 worth of stuff. But the membership fee is interesting, the subscription model grocery store. If you look at Costco's annual reports and their numbers, you know, they have about $150 billion in sales every year. Their cost of goods on that is $132 million. So their profit margin, their margin on their sales is only about 11%. They really make the bulk of their profits on those membership fees, which amount to about $3 billion a year. That 11% margin they make on that stuff they actually sell, you know, these 72-pound things of cheese, that 11% margin goes to cover their operation costs. So, you know, their stores, keeping the lights on, their employees. And really, the bulk of their profit comes from those membership fees that they charge, which they charge on a variety of levels. But most people get what's called the gold membership, which is just $60, gets you access into the store. Kind of gives you a free pass to buy whatever the hell you want in there.
They also had a very lucrative deal with American Express for a long time, right? And I know that Amex was like, there was big headlines when Amex lost that deal and everyone, yeah. And Amex has, at least according to the Wall Street Journal, went into full-on panic mode to try and get all of the small businesses back when they lost the Costco card because they were like, that's like a backbone of, because...
Yeah.
The small businesses who had that card, they would spend, you know, seven figures often annually on those cards.
Yeah, I don't know too much about the numbers behind that, but that is like a royalty model. They'll get kind of a percentage royalty from the sales. And yeah, you do have the executive tier cardholders going in and spending six figure sums. For a time at least, and possibly still, that is a big part of their model as well.
Well, so what are these tiers? Like the basic individual tier is the $60 a year, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then it goes up, you get like cheaper prices, or what do you get if you spend more than that?
You get, you know, the 120 executive tier, I think is, you get a percentage back. I think you get 2% back or something. So it really only makes sense if you spend a lot, but... you know, they have 53 million paying cardholders, and the bulk of them are those standard $60, you know, everyday suburban families going in there.
And who else does this? Walmart has like a version of this, right?
Walmart has Sam's Club, which Sam Walton, the founder of Walmart, started Sam's Club as a way to compete with the Price Club, which was Costco's predecessor. Costco actually merged with the Price Club in the 90s to compete with Sam's Club because they were such a big threat. And for a while, they were Price Costco, and then they kind of just rebranded into Costco over time. But yeah, there's other players in the space who operate on a very similar model. I think the thing that distinguishes Costco from some of the other players is they've always had a mentality of putting their employees and their customers over profits. I don't want to sound like a proselytizer of Costco, but they've proven it time and time again. They pay their employees well. Their shareholders often get angry that they don't increase their margin caps on the goods that they sell. And they have a good track record of treating their customers and employees well, passing down any savings they get to people who actually go and shop in their store.
And the employees are well paid, and they have much less turnover than the Walmarts of this world.
Yeah, there's an economic benefit for Costco for treating employees well, too. The average turnover rate in retail at large is 65%. The average pay is like $10 an hour. At Costco, they have a much higher retention rate of employees over time. They pay them about $21 an hour on average. And, they give them things like health-sponsored benefits. They have a union with 16,000 members. They have a good track record of treating employees well.
So the other big question I had about Costco is, if you're only going there once a month, how do you deal with perishable food? Or is perishable food not really a big part of what Costco sells?
They do sell quite a bit of perishable food. I think what you're tapping into is, it's a huge debate whether or not you save money shopping at Costco. That's a question everyone asks. Like, do you actually save money shopping at Costco buying all this bulk stuff? And if you look at the per unit costs, you save money. Things are cheaper. They do a lot to drive down those costs for you. But if you look at food waste, that's a big problem with buying in bulk. If you factor in the amount of food that customers are probably wasting when they're doing these big bulk purchases, the value add of shopping at Costco does decrease. Food waste is a big problem. I mean, Costco's bulk principles extend to its produce, and you buy a 24 pack of apples or whatever. I would hope that the majority of people who are buying those things have really big families or just eat a lot of apples, but.
So you can't go in there and buy like 3 apples.
I don't think so. No, you're looking at like 18 or 24. If you want a muffin, you got to buy 12. The exception is like their food courts. You can go wild and buy a single hot dog for $1.50 at the food court. But off their shelves, you got to go big if you're going into a Costco, and that sometimes probably means more food waste if you're not a responsible consumer
or just non-food sort of. I can easily imagine that if you buy, I don't know, a dozen bottles of shampoo, that a lot of people will not actually wind up using all dozen bottles of shampoo for whatever reason.
Yeah, although I'm sure that the people who stocked up on, like 10 packs of hand sanitizer are pretty happy about it now.
So let me ask you the big question of the moment right now, which is toilet paper. Of all the things, ex ante, if you told me there was going to be a pandemic crisis and people were going to wind up stocking up on essentials, but there's one item in particular that is going to wind up getting sold out of every single market and every single superstore, and I'd be like, well, obviously that's going to be Tylenol, right? Or that's going to be Gatorade, or that's going to be whatever they need for when they get sick. Or I don't know what I would have thought. Maybe probably soap, since soap seems to be the number one weapon in this war we're in. Like, maybe people will be like, stocking up on soap. No, none of that. It's toilet paper. Like, is there any, do you understand this weird thing? Like, how is it toilet paper that everyone has suddenly got like hung up on?
It really is it's an unlikely golden asset of our times, really. It's I don't know how the focus became on toilet paper. I will tell you, there is a history. This whole thing actually kind of reminds me of back in 1973. Some of your listeners might remember the oil embargo. There was a market dip, and there was a toilet paper panic in 1973. And the means of transmission back then that stoked the panic was not the internet. It was, I think Johnny Carson made a joke on a TV show about there being a shortage of toilet paper based on some governmental report that hinted that there might be slightly less paper, and Americans kind of collectively lost their minds, flooded the toilet paper market. Every store was sold out for a few weeks. I think that's kind of what we're seeing now. It's everything you're hearing from manufacturers is telling us that there actually isn't a shortage. There's nothing to worry about. Yesterday in the New York Times, there was an article to the effect of, there's plenty of food in America, people, don't worry. The supply chains are functioning perfectly fine. I even saw a video on Twitter yesterday of this toilet paper employee in a big manufacturing facility driving around on a forklift, laughing maniacally at these at these mountains of toilet paper around him. And he was just saying, see, everyone, there's plenty of toilet paper. Calm down, calm down. The problem, I think, is customers are lining up for as long as 2 hours before Costco opens. They're storming in there and jousting over these 40 packs. And but, you know, it's interesting. Costco's unique role in this toilet paper situation. Toilet paper is actually one of, if not their best selling product in the entire store. They sell a billion rolls a year. They actually employ full-time toilet paper engineers to test things like tensile strength, cross direction, the loft and thickness. And they even use a spectrophotometer to measure the whiteness of their toilet paper. So they put a lot of effort into the Kirkland brand toilet paper.
And that's their own brand is Kirkland, right?
Their private label brand that accounts for about 30% of their sales. But yeah, it is interesting that toilet paper has become the focus of our panic buying.
I do think it's self-fulfilling in a lot of ways, that it could have been anything. But then once, for whatever reason, like a couple of, as you say, tweets went viral or Johnny Castle went on the television or whatever, and everyone started thinking toilet paper, everyone started buying toilet paper just because everyone was buying toilet paper. And there's no actual other reasons for that. And it could have been exactly anything at all.
Exactly.
But it's happening even at Costco. People are going to Costco maybe twice a month now. You know, there's the toilet paper run. I have seen like the videos of people, like, as you say, lining up outside Costco with empty shopping carts before it even opens to get in there, like some kind of weird Black Friday situation.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, the lines are there. The lines are there. I went to a Costco yesterday and there's plenty of food there. I mean, you know, the shelves are well stocked, but for sure, they're out of a few things. You go a few hours into the day and they're going to be out of TP. It's not necessarily because there's a shortage. It's more just that, you know, people are lining up. They're storming in there. They're putting as much as they can fit in their cart. I think Costco, I'm not 100% certain, but I think they are starting to institute some caps.
Are they rationing toilet paper?
They're rationing, exactly. And
a mere 100 rolls of toilet paper each, more than that.
Yeah, I think the last ration I heard was that you could only buy 2 packs, but that's still 80 rolls of TP. So it's going to last you a while if you're lucky.
What have I missed? What's the big crazy thing about Costco that me being an urbanite, I don't even comprehend or understand?
One interesting thing we could mention is Costco is extremely selective about who it works with. Anyone who works with Costco is going to be in for a hard time. They're going to get pushed to bring down the cost of their products. Costco will even work directly with people who make things to help bring these costs down. There was one story I heard once about, you know, this teddy bear company wanted to sell their bears in Costco. And the retail price was like $100, and they were willing to sell them to Costco for $50 each at this bulk price. But Costco really was intent about selling these bears for $29 in their store. So they worked for like months with this teddy bear company to reduce the costs way down, like 40%, so they could sell these things for $29. And they would have made the same profit margin if they had sold them for $60. All that time and effort to drive down the price, optimistically, I think it was mostly for the consumer's benefit of their stores. They know that people come in there to find good deals and they want to stay true to that. But it did remind me, hearing that story, of a perfect counter that I once heard from someone else. I once interviewed Robert Crandall, who is the ex-president of American Airlines. And he told me a story about how back in the 80s, he took one olive off of every person's salad on the airplane back when they served food on planes. And that saved the company $40,000 a year, just taking that one olive off the salad. And in that case, an executive made a move that saved the company money at the consumer's expense. Costco often will do the opposite. They'll make a move to reduce a cost, but they'll pass the saving generally down the chain instead of hoarding it at the top level.
Yeah, the name that has been going through my head this whole conversation is IKEA. Like, it seems to be like, it's exactly the same model, right? You just have massive warehouses, super low prices. But Costco does seem to have a lot more consumer loyalty than IKEA does. People like it as a pleasant, you know, place. Like, whereas there's nothing worse in the world than visiting an IKEA.
People are obsessed with Costco. I mean, they're like forums. I mean, it's out of control. Part of the whole membership model isn't just a source of revenue. It's creating this cult of frugality. People like to share their stories about how much money they save at Costco. And like I said before, the average Costco customer is pretty well off, but they're also incredibly frugal. They're almost like, you know, a Silicon Valley engineer who makes $200,000 a year who insists on only owning 4 t-shirts. It's like, that's kind of the typical Costco customer. But
which they bought at Costco.
Which they probably bought at Costco or Sam's Club, yeah. But yeah, there's a total cult of frugality to the membership model that works in their benefit as well.
Zach Lockett, thank you for bringing us up to speed on Costco. And we will put a little link in the show notes as well for your amazing piece on Chick-fil-A, which we didn't have time to get to. But that is a whole other insanely amazing and kind of unique business model. Thank you very much for being with us on Slate Money Food.
That was fun. Thanks, Felix.